Welcome to our latest Charity Pulse of 2025, our bi-weekly charity podcast. My name is Charles Mosqueda, Charities Director at Quilt Achievement Investment Management. I'm delighted to be joined by my regular musketeers, Catherine Ross-Jomji, leading charity legal beagle at Shakespeare Martineau, and James Saunders, the hero of the accountancy world, who's a partner at accountancy and audit firm Moore Kingston Smith. Together, we explore the latest pressing issues to give you insight into the issues affecting the not-for-profit and voluntary organisations. Don't forget, you can catch us on Spotify, Apple Podcast, YouTube, and on various websites. We'd be really welcome for you to send us comments or questions, as we'd love to hear from you. So it's been a really packed couple of weeks, certainly nothing boring. My first thing I think we might talk about, I spotted that Save the Children is planning to make redundancies of about 200 people out of 751 staff and cut their staff costs by about 6 million from an annual budget of 44 million. And I've noticed there are a number of others. We've got the Scottish Council for Voluntary Organisations, who are also launching a redundancy scheme to close their 500,000 deficit. And also I noticed Marie Curie also had a fairly large deficit. I don't know who'd like to start. James.
You'd say the children was one that hit the headlines this last week or so. Stonewall is also planning on cutting back services. There's some others that have hit the headlines, Church Army amongst them. I mean, it was bad enough before this week's a government announcement of the cuts to international aid, and of course that has generated a response from the some of the bigger international charities bemoaning the cuts in the international aid budget, which will obviously go straight from some of their budgets. So there's an awful lot of money being removed from the sector. I listened to one of the other podcasts with Mr. Campbell and Mr. Stewart just the last couple of days, and Roy Stewart was saying quite correctly, I think, that actually the international aid budget is largely America and UK. I mean, we are one of the two big funders in international aid. So to have our money disappear is really massive for the international aid budget and those charities that operate in that space. So yes, Save the Children is one that their redundancies were, I think, more to do with the domestic issues and the domestic national insurance increases and everything to do with that. But then this week, that extra cut to the international aid budget, there's another round of problems coming up.
Yeah, I think charities are definitely feeling the squeeze, aren't they? And I think whether it is the national insurance contributions increase or just that plus many other things, I think we are seeing more of these announcements, aren't we, that, you know, charities are not exempt from the kind of economic pressures of what's happening currently. And I think we might well see services being withdrawn, and some of the big names that you would think might be quite immune to this sort of pressure are clearly not.
And Charles, we've said this before, but the larger grant makers are now feeling the pressure and getting even more applications for their money, and those applications are becoming more and more or less and less relevant to the grant makers in question. So just this week, there's a couple that have been in the headlines, that the cloth workers in particular, saying that they're looking at re-engineering their application process because of the weight of applicants and the non-relevance of the applications they're getting in. And actually, one of my clients, the Peter Harrison Foundation, relatively small or slightly smaller grant maker, have got the same problem. They're just overwhelmed with applications and just not being able to meet their objectives.
Well, I have to say, as you guys know, we went through with RL Glasspool a very big strategic change in the way that we distribute grants, and have completely changed from being, you know, somebody receiving applications to now going out and finding preferred providers that we've gone out and selected and giving them chunks of money, because we had exactly that same problem. We got to a stage where we'd open up our online application on a Monday morning and close it 3 minutes later because we were inundated. And the real concern as trustees was not the number of people we were granting money to, because actually we had a very high acceptance rate because we'd had very clear instructions, but it was actually the amount of time that was being wasted by people applying for grants where they didn't even know where they were going to be able to get within that 3 minute window. So I think although I know it's difficult and there's been a lot of pressure on grant funders, if it changes the way that they start thinking about distributing grants and makes it more efficient, because the one thing we've done is I think ended up reducing our costs so that we're now able to give another 160,000 towards the causes that we wanted to support by reducing our costs of administration from about 20% down to 14%. So, you know, I think there can be some good things that come out of this, and I hope that that will be the lasting message. But yeah, I think you're right, is since the COVID incident and the pressure that's been going under, we've definitely had that. The other thing I noticed and saw a headline on, and I'd love a bit of insight if one of you are able to do, is that charity funders should confront their own privileges conference here. So this is at the ESG Imperative conference, Catherine. So I'm going to mention the name, but it came from Bateswells and Braithwaite. And they were asking that funders should seek to confront their own privileges and biases. Does anybody want to put a bit of clarity and light on that particular comment?
Okay, I'll go first. But I think the clue is that when you're speaking at an ESG conference, you will shoehorn a title in to fit with the ESG messaging. Whereas actually, when I was reading it, I'm not sure funders necessarily have privileges and biases that need to be confronted. And also the suggestions for how that could be confronted was, I thought, quite naive, in the sense of, you know, people with lived experience need to be involved in, you know, investment application and spending of, you know, what could be quite significant sums of money. I mean, this is a complex area. I think, you know, it can be made more accessible. Funders can choose to make it more accessible to charities of all sorts of sizes and backgrounds, and it can operate more effectively and efficiently. But I wasn't sure. I never quite like the, as I would see it, the kind of guilt intro that, you know, you should feel bad, you are wrong, you are mean, you have issues that are holding everybody else back. And I just wasn't convinced that is the case. And I thought it was a little bit trite to say that legal documentation is too complex when it doesn't have to be, and it's as simple as the legal advisors to that charity want to make it.
James?
Yeah. I mean, it was a strange mixture of messages, I thought. The one I struggle with is the subcommittee's point. Social experience should join their investment or grant committee. To my mind, subcommittees exist to bring specialism into a group who can then report to a main board. So subcommittees, again, to my mind, shouldn't necessarily have to have a balanced number of people who know what they're talking about, and those that don't, in the hope that those that don't are bringing, you know, questions that those that, you know, have the relevant experience don't think about. I mean, I understand that argument, but I think that's more for board level than anything else. If you're having a subcommittee to bring, it's designed so that knowledgeable and expert people can do the granular work that perhaps boards of trustees, who, as we said before, are not full-time employed people in any way, shape or form. It's a delegation of duties so that you don't have to, you know, too much work falling on too few people.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a great believer of people with lived experiences being on boards and, you know, having them as voices, because I think that's useful. But I mean, there was one particular comment in this article, and because it's in inverted commas, I assume it was actually stated, but very cold, harsh, one-sided legal documents could sour the relationship between funder and recipient before it even begins. And you just think, hold a second here, we're dealing in the charity sector, and I know from my own personal experience as a trustee, you know, when you're drawing up a legal document, the two things you want to do, particularly for a small organisation that doesn't have that expertise, is one, that it is fair for both sides, and that it is also clear and so that they understand exactly what the obligations. This isn't a business arrangement. This isn't, you're not trying to do somebody out or anything. You're just trying to put something in place that gives clarity to the relationship. So I must admit, I was slightly bemused by the whole conversation.
It did make me laugh because I thought the very cold, harsh document made me think, well, I'll put some smileys in partway through to keep everybody's spirits up, and I'll define them as friend one and friend two, and we're in this together, you know, LOL, lots of love.
Do you think all legal documents would do well with having a few emojis in them?
A few more emojis. I think, yeah, can't get enough of them. Yeah.
Yeah, brilliant. That leads me on to the next thing I read, which is sort of tied up with going back to the first topic around redundancies, but toxic workplace culture. So there was a survey out from Charity Job Finder Civil Society about toxic workplace culture, main reason behind staff's resignation, new research says.
Yeah. It was also the even higher proportion was burnout and work-related stress were widespread, and reporting a frequent or constant stress. And I thought it was quite a good antidote to those that say those working in the charity sector are too well paid and in cushy jobs. Whereas doesn't sound much like that to me. Talked about recognition and appreciation were found to be lacking. I just thought that maybe that is more of the reality, but I thought toxic workplace does not sound like a good endorsement of why would you want to come and work within a charity.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is one of these things where, in a way, if you're surveying people who are leaving their jobs, then there's a fair chance they're leaving their jobs because they're not particularly happy with them one way or another. The toxic workplace is, you know, phrase is a very easy one to trot out these days and can cover a multitude of sins, admittedly, but perhaps some minor ones along the way. So I don't know. I mean, my client base, if I look at my client base, and I know that there are a lot of tribunals flying around at the moment, so there are obviously disagreements, but my experience is that the tribunals tend to be on treatment of individual people rather than necessarily because of general environmental conditions, if you see what I mean. And it's very much, I was treated particularly because of me or what I do, or and that's what I'm complaining about, rather than generally the workplace was, you know, to use the phrase, a toxic environment. So that's my experience personally. I would say that toxic environment is too general a phrase. And anyone, you know, a lot of people will use that when really what they mean is they didn't like work very much.
Yeah, I think, I mean, the lesson to me from looking at it from a trustee's point of view, and I don't think this is for charities alone, I think this is across all businesses, and certainly my experience over, you know, a number of years working, is that it's that bit about recognition and appreciation. I think people are very slow generally to actually turn around to people and say they're doing a good job and well done and pat them on the back. I think people are very, can be quite quick to point out people's faults rather than looking at their things. And you could say, well, that's what their job is and that's what they're paid for. But actually giving people a little bit of encouragement and saying thank you occasionally normally goes a very long way. The final thing I did notice is that there was a survey of small charity leaders. I'm not quite sure what the definition of small is, but where there is report of poor mental health due to their roles, 20% experiencing severe impacts such as suicidal thoughts, hospitalization and burnout. So I think, I mean, I think this all leads into the stress around money and people having to make redundancies and everything else. There definitely seems
and
to
Charles,
be.
I think this is linked in as much as I think probably those small charity leaders are constantly reading about stories like, you know, that everyone thinks it's a toxic workplace. So, you know, you must be under enormous pressure all the time to make sure that people aren't going to, you know, aren't dissatisfied and aren't going to claim to be dissatisfied in these sort of surveys. I mean, as you know, as an employer myself, if you like, I always worry about our teams and, you know, desperately hoping that they are happy and we can keep them happy, because A, they, you know, people deserve that, but B, it's very, very easy to make quite serious complaints these days, even if it's not in tribunal or formal legal settings. You know, it only takes people to get on social media or respond to these surveys, and suddenly your reputation is messed up.
But I do think we need, but the people, if they do see, you know, people doing good stuff, vocalize it, tell people that. I think it's too easy just to assume that they know. And I think take the opportunity, because actually that doesn't cost you anything. And giving somebody a pat on the back, not, and making sure it's genuine, not it's not being sycophantic. It's just, you know, get on with it, do it, because people will come away thinking, yeah, actually, thanks very much. You've appreciated what I've done.
Yeah.
So anyway, now Naomi Campbell is back in the headlines, and we've also got Gary Mond, trustee of the Jewish National Fund UK, has successfully appealed against his disqualification for alleged Islamophobia, marking the first time the Charity Commission has had a disqualification order reversed. And then we've got Naomi Campbell has been granted permission to appeal. Catherine, as the legal beagle, you've no doubt scrutinised this on both sides.
Yeah, they're both very interesting topics. You always want to know all more, I find, about the background. I did wonder on the Gary Mond issue. He had resigned from certain charities before making statements. It's seemed in the reporting anyway, and I think there was an argument of, well, why did he need to be disqualified? Because he couldn't have brought those charities into disrepute because he was no longer associated with them at the time he made those comments. I think it sounded like there was more to it, in that he incurred £60,000 worth of his own legal fees on the appeal, which made me think it's not a one-track argument to use that amount of funding to argue one point. So I did wonder, and him querying whether this is a good use of taxpayers' money, you always think, well, that's a standard argument, you know, if somebody does something you don't like. The Naomi Campbell one always amuses me, because the number of my clients who've said to me, oh, Catherine, do you think she used a model constitution? And I was so straight-laced that I was saying, well, of course she used a model constitution, you've got to. And then realised, oh, I get it. Okay, yeah, you're being funny. And I didn't, yeah. So, you know, I think it's really interesting. I don't know how easy it would be for mere mortals to say somebody has stolen my identity and has been sending emails purporting to be me, and quite how far removed you have to be from the different roles you've chosen to take on. I just kind of feel, even if that is true, she's chosen to be a charity trustee. She's a volunteer for this charity. She needed to have taken steps to find out what's happening, not be so distant from it that this has happened over, you know, must have been a period of months, and she seems to know nothing about it. So I thought, okay, she's had leave to appeal, but we're a long way off, you know, to see what the outcome of that will be, if anything.
But there was also, there were two other trustees that have been, have they been disqualified, one for 9 years and one for 4 years, which one was a lawyer and the other one was a businesswoman. Yeah. I mean, have they also been given a right to appeal?
Yeah, and I think, you know, my reading of that was, you don't employ your professional advisors to be your charity trustees. They're two very distinct roles. You know, I will set up the charity for clients, but I am not becoming a trustee of it once it's. And I did wonder if there was a blurred line there between they had taken on those roles almost as a responsibility to Naomi Campbell as their client, and whether they just accepted that, okay, yeah, we didn't do what we should have done. I don't know. But it just seemed to me that's not how you select a board of trustees.
Oh, so you think that the lawyer might be of the firm that she used to use that she's no longer using?
Or her personal lawyer or something like that. You know,
Yeah.
where people say, oh, well, I've got some professional advisors, they'll become my trustees. And you think, no, your professional advisors are there to give professional advice. You should have people that are enthusiastic for the cause and want to volunteer to be a trustee of the charity, not because in some indirect way they're being paid to be there.
I hope at some point somebody will, an investigative journalist will actually give us all the facts and the inside story to this, because I think it could be quite an interesting read. But we will keep people posted. The one thing, just going back to Gary Mond, because I think there's an interesting issue here raised around social media, isn't it? Of when you are commenting on social media, and I think this applies for people who are employed, whether you're doing it in a personal capacity or whether you're doing it as a trustee. I don't know what advice, James, why don't you kick off with this one, that you would give people about the use of social media?
Well, I think that very often you do see people on their feeds say, "I am, all views are mine and not representative of the organization I am a trustee of or a director of, employee of, whatever." And I think you're on, I would say you're on pretty safe ground to post, reasonably controversial stuff, although obviously not. Don't go anywhere near stuff that would be considered to be illegal, or I have to say, on the Mond case, I was a bit confused about whether it was a question of timing or whether it really was a question of what he wrote was so unpleasant that it got him into trouble in its own right. I mean, what they quote, none of it is absolutely horrific. A lot of it is his opinion. And although, unpleasant to some, what are we hearing from the other side of the Atlantic at the moment? All this talk about free speech dying in Britain, and Europe. Well, I got the feeling this might be verging on that side of the fence from the Charity Commission. It's just a bit heavy-handed again.
Well, except one, and I have no view on this, but one of them was he liked, was it a post that had come from Pamela Geller, who's an American far-right political commentator banned from entering the UK by the Conservative government in 2013 for
Again,
his anti-Muslim views. I mean,
is that in its own right enough to get you, on its own to get you banned from being a trustee of anything? It might, it's just a,
I think.
I can't see that the link should be that close. The
But
moment
I
anywhere near.
think people need to be careful about what they say on. I mean, it's a bit like what we said to tell our kids, isn't it? When you put something up on social media, it's up there forever. You can't then take it back down again. So, what views you may have today, and things can get very, very easily misunderstood. I mean, I have to say, I've had a number of conversations over what has been happening with Israel and Gaza, and I have to say, it's a conversation that I've backed away from very quickly because it becomes very contentious, and I never feel I quite know enough about it to really be able to comment with any authority.
I think
Catherine?
it's interesting because when I do trustee training, I talk to trustees about, there used to be, wasn't it? They think, or people think, you can cut yourself in two and you can post and say, these views are my own. It has no bearing on this charity of which I'm a trustee. But I'm not clear actually you can distance to that extent because they are your views and you are a human being and your views influence the way that you make decisions when you sit as a trustee. So, is it enough distance to simply say these views are my own? And I see that more from trustees now saying they don't post
I
comment
think
for that
there was
reason.
a Catherine, there's a difference between the distance from being a good trustee. Okay, you might be a but frankly you might be a pretty poor trustee and represent your charity badly, and not ju and just get them into trouble as this is this guy and get yourself into trouble. There is a difference between that and being so doing something so bad that you get barred from being a trustee. There
There is
is a
that.
I think, and the point that the tribunal came to in the end was it was unnecessary and it was excessive. And I
Yeah.
think that's right. The guy clearly did some stuff that wasn't very pleasant to probably the majority of people. And some of the stuff that he was liking was stuff that, the lady has, someone that's been barred from the UK. Okay, it's not great. But it's someone who's opinionated, and that's not enough to get him barred as a trustee.
Yes. I think there are risks from it, but I totally agree. A disqualification order, they were saying it's not proportionate, wasn't necessary. Agree. Yeah.
It does show, doesn't it, the whole thing about free speech and that balance between doing that and then becoming something else. And I just think you just got to be thoughtful whenever you're doing any of these things. I'm not saying that Gary Mond wasn't thoughtful, but because I have to say I haven't read his tweets and haven't looked at him and made no judgment on it. But yes, well, there we go. Anyway, so I suppose if we're those that are on active social media probably know this already, and those that are less so, like myself, who doesn't really do much on social media, if I do ever venture onto it, I shall be thoughtful. Generally, actually, the best piece of advice I ever had is that type something out, but don't actually send it till the next day. So you, in the cold light of day where you've reread it, are you still happy for it to be sent? Perhaps that's a good piece of advice.
I think, Charles, it is, you know, this is changing day by day at the moment as well with the president and his compadre, Mr. Musk. You know, they're changing, I think, the nature and dynamic of social media such that it's becoming, you know, more is becoming, less is becoming unacceptable, let's put it that way. And I know at the same time as a lot of charities, it's all been reported, they're all leaving X in their droves at the moment, understandably, because it is becoming toxic, to use that phrase, that word from earlier. But, you know, those that use it are just becoming freer with it.
Yeah, it's interesting because Charity Finance Group announced this week that they're leaving X. So they're just another of charities that are not getting out. Yeah. Anyway, something to discuss in the future. I think that's a good place to end so that people can think about that. Thank you, James. Thank you, Catherine. Say that we live in interesting times would be an understatement. I think I said exactly that last time, but I shall say it again. Thank you for listening. We'd love to hear from you. If you have any questions or want us to cover any particular topics, please, please, please do get in touch. Do share with friends and family. And according to our friend in the White House, Truth Social, this is the only charity podcast worth listening to.